Hey, we are so excited to tell you about an awesome wedding planning resource we have created just for you.
The Big Wedding Planning Masterclass is a digital course where we teach you how to plan your wedding our way.
Step by step, with videos, downloadable templates, spreadsheets, and pro tips, this course is basically like having us there with you to plan your entire wedding from start to finish.
No detail left behind. Whether your wedding budget is $3,000 or $100,000, whether your wedding is coming up in 3 months or 18 months, we worked hard to create this course so it works for you.
So check it out, beautiful human. Go to www.thebigweddingplanningmasterclass.com for information, or you can always just go to our podcast website and click on Masterclass. Again, that's www.thebigweddingplanningmasterclass.com. The Big Wedding Planning Podcast. Just two wedding planners tearing it up. Listen, learn, plan that way. Hello, hello, and welcome to the Big Wedding Planning Podcast. A show for anyone involved in planning a wedding. We want you to learn something valuable and be entertained at the same time. My name is Michelle Martinez.
And I'm Christy Matthews. Hello. Thank you for joining us. We're happy to be here.
Yep. Nowhere else I'd rather be than right here talking to you in that little screen right here with this big old microphone in front of me.
Yes, you're talking to me, and we've actually been talking for 2 hours already, but we're happy to be here in the earbuds or playing in your car or wherever you are listening to the podcast. We're happy that you're
doing a good job on the running, buddy. You're doing a good job running. You're doing a good job washing dishes. You're doing a good job on your walk. You're driving very safely on your commute. Mm-hmm. Maybe you're making love right now, but you got the earbud in one ear. So just, just go with it. Just go with it. Making
that
love.
Is some commitment.
Or making bread or wedding cakes right now. Maybe you're a wedding cake baker. We know a lot of you listen to us too. So shout out. Love ya. Anyway.
Okay.
This is a lot of you on a Sunday. So we need to finish this intro because I'm tired.
Okay, this is the first Wednesday in June. We're already in June when you're listening to this. That is
holy
crazy.
Crap.
It is summer.
We're halfway through this freaking year. What?
It is summer 2021, and when we were recording a year ago, like, everything was at a halt. Like, everybody was like, are weddings even gonna be a thing? And the answer is yes, weddings are going to be a thing. They are a thing, and they're coming back this summer and next summer like a typhoon just like rushing over us.
But how long did it feel like 2020 lasted? Like, this is crazy that we're already half into 21. Because last year at this time, we were all freaking out. Like, we were all just like numb. Like, we didn't understand what was left, right, up, or down. We didn't know, as my mother would say, whether to shit or eat a banana, basically.
I've never heard that saying, and
well,
I love it.
Now you have. Okay.
Okay, so put that in your back pocket, everyone.
So here we are halfway through the year. We're in June. It is summer.
A lot of people, including us, are like looking forward to traveling
yes.
a little bit more. There was a lot of vacations canceled last summer. I had a big trip to Hawaii that got canceled, and we're not redoing it this summer, but we have other fun stuff planned. And there's that always comes out around now is like a summer reading list or like beach reading, lists of like light, lovely, delightful books that you can like pick up at an airport and then just read on your vacation.
And which, I know, by the way, this book you could pick up at the airport, because I saw Georgia posted on her Instagram a couple of days ago that she was pleasantly surprised to find her book at the airport.
At the airport. I love that. I didn't see that.
Yeah. It's super cute. She was all excited.
I'm a big reader, but more when I travel. I definitely read more when I'm traveling because I like to read on an airplane. It's just like, that's my default. So I didn't read a ton of novels last summer because I was not going anywhere. And I don't know what I was doing, just wallowing. We were working on the masterclass. You were scheduling calls. I don't know. What were we doing? I wasn't reading.
We were not together a lot last year.
This summer.
I haven't read very much in the last 45 years. So.
Yes. Which is a difference between. Yes. And you can listen to this on audiobook. And we talk about that in the episode. And that came out recently too. So I'm excited about today's episode because it is about a book, a fictional, definitely like summer kind of vibe read. Mm-hmm. And it's all about wedding planning. The author and our guest today is Georgia Clark. She's going to introduce herself, and she's wonderful, and it was a great conversation. On her website, her little bio, I thought was like perfectly succinct. So it says, "Hello, I'm Georgia Clark. I write smart, sweet, sexy stories that I hope will make you swoon. I'm Australian and live in Brooklyn with my hot wife. And I also founded and host the popular storytelling series Generation Women," which sounds very cool too. So George is joining us. We're talking about her new novel, It Had to Be You is the name of it. It's very much like a Love Actually kind of story. And we talk all about her writing process, because as wedding planners, we were curious to know how she kind of got into the wedding planning industry, because the entire book is set within the wedding industry in New York City. Like, all the characters are vendors and friends and people getting married or planning weddings. So we talk about her process, but as with many interviews we do, we also like opened up another conversational track when, in our onboarding call, Georgia mentioned that she married her wife here in the United States. And during the wedding planning process, which was also when she was writing the book, a lot of feelings came up about that, like being somebody who isn't from here, who knew that the guest list for the wedding would not be equally like half her friends and family and half her partners, and that she in some ways felt a little left out. But then that was kind of surprising, and they didn't have a wedding planner. So there was a lot for us to talk about with Georgia, including her book, of course, but also her own wedding and wedding planning experience. So that's what today's episode is all about. And I encourage you, if you are interested, listen all the way to the end, because we are going to book club this book, It Had to Be You, in a Zoom meeting with Georgia and myself and listeners who've read the book. And at the end of this episode, we have information about that book club and a little giveaway for some of you listeners that want the book for free. That information is at the end of the episode.
So you listen all the way to the end. But it's good.
I hope you join us. It'll be so fun.
It's TBWPP's first book club, you know, led by Christy Matthews.
Yeah, I've never done that before. But knowing that the author will be there, I'm sure there will be plenty to talk about. So it's going to be great. I loved this book. And everyone I've talked to that's read it really liked it. So it's a great summer read, and we hope you like the episode.
Yeah, and we love Georgia too. She's super sweet. You're going to hear how awesome she is. Thank you, Georgia. And let's go. Let's get into it.
Let's do it.
Hi, I'm Georgia Clark, author of the modern new romantic comedy, It Had to Be You.
Yay, thank you. Well, we're so excited to have you. This has been a long time in the works. Mm-hmm. I read the book and then I sent it to my friend Lauren, who lives in Chicago. And I was like, you have to read this fast and send it back, because I'm going to have to have it while I interview her. She didn't. But then like right after I had that call with her, because I was giving her like 10 days to read it. You know, she's got a job and a baby, and I don't know if she hasn't gotten to it. But then right after I texted her that, like the next day, the new one came in the mail. So I guess your team.
Yeah.
Because I guess the first one I got was like.
An advanced copy. You got a special copy.
Oh, that's a fancy one. You got to get that back from Lauren. I guess
you said there were like some little tweaks that might have been made afterwards.
It's actually I think there's a lot of changes that happened, but every reader is like, oh, I didn't even notice a single typo. And I'm like, oh my God, it's full of typos. It's full of little mistakes. It's full of things. But I approach it with a completely nitpicky eye, like fine tooth comb.
I pride myself on finding little typos sometimes in like actual books that I'm really reading and like, what, how did that get past, you know, something mm-hmm. like simple, but I didn't note any,
but then
I did get this new copy and just jumped to the same page that I had on my notes. And I was like, oh, that looks the same. So in my mind, they're the same. And if Lauren, my friend, is getting any, you know,
Georgia, secrets. Will it be an audiobook?
Yes. Yeah. It's going to be an audio. It already is an audio book with a full cast, 9 narrators and like an ensemble cast, which is going to be so fun. But the audiobook, the ebook, and the paperback original are all out now.
Okay. Because I'm more of an audiobook kind of girl.
Love audiobooks. Yeah.
So I wasn't the only one to make this comparison, but it's very reminiscent of the movie Love Actually. You've seen that, right, Michelle?
Yes.
That's my favorite holiday movie. We watch it every year along with like Home Alone and The Usual Suspects.
Vacation? Do you watch Christmas Vacation?
Yes, okay, that good. One. And A Christmas Story and Schindler's List. Just kidding. We don't watch Schindler's
List. That would have been a depressing end to Christmas Day.
Go gather around, everyone. Gather around by the fire. We'll have some popcorn.
And cry. No,
but it's part of our like rotation. And what I love about it is, of course, all the individual stories in one city and then how, you know, you find out how they all interact. So it's light and delightful and like funny and touching. And I think anybody that watches it has like their favorite, oh, that's my favorite scene, or she's my favorite character. That's my favorite couple. And that is very much what this book is in my reading of it.
Yeah. I was inspired to use the Love Actually structure. It's not a retelling by any means of the story. It's something to do with characters, but the idea of 5 interweaving love stories is such a good idea. And I wanted to update that for a modern audience to have more inclusivity and diversity in the cast that sort of would reflect 2021.
So tell us about this, your story, and I would love to hear how New York City also was like, because it seemed like another character to me. So how it played in.
Yeah. So the plot of the book is the 5 stories revolve around a pair of mismatched Brooklyn wedding planners, which is why we're talking today.
Woo-hoo.
And the setup is for 20 years, Liv and Elliot Goldenhorn have run the beloved wedding planning business in Love in New York from their beautiful Brooklyn brownstone, right up until the moment that Elliot unexpectedly dies in the bed of his younger girlfriend, Savannah Shipley, who doesn't know he was married. And in a twist no one sees coming, Elliot leaves his half of the successful wedding planning business to Savannah, who comes from Kentucky, where she lives, and arrives on Liv's doorstep with a copy of the will and a strong desire to help rebuild this now failing business that had sort of fallen apart in the aftermath of Elliot's death. And Liv and Savannah couldn't be any different. Liv is a cynical 49-year-old Jewish New Yorker, and Savannah is a bright-eyed, bushy-tailed 23-year-old Christian from Kentucky. They are worlds apart, culturally worlds apart. And the story takes place over the course of about a year as they slowly begin to sort of rebuild this business together. And they both have a love story, and the other 3 love stories are of the vendors that work the weddings, the florists and the caterers and the musicians and the servers. So it's very much about a behind the scenes look at weddings, and the story kind of careens through all of these various New York weddings. And there's weddings in the Catskills and the Hamptons and New York City. And I've lived in Brooklyn since 2009. I'm Australian. That's my accent.
Really?
And I love the city. Yeah, spoiler alert.
We were just going to ask you about Ireland. And now we do the
outfit. Yeah, the whole thing is about your favorite Irish celebrities. I love the city. I fell in love with it as soon as I came here on a 10-day trip and then promptly moved back here. And it's the city is reflected in not just the places the characters go and you know, the sort of, there's a few, you know, name-checked bookshops and restaurants and things like that, but the way in which the cast is really reflective of the wide array of people who live in New York across race and sexuality, class, age. You know, it's, the city is a melting pot, and it was a natural way to be able to pull together all of these different kinds of people and have them looking for love, looking for commitment, trying to figure it out, as we all are in this city that has such great rom-com history. You know, we, you know, Nora Ephron films and so many great books and movies and TV shows that are set in New York. And I think it's because the city is, in some ways, it's antithetical to romance because it's so, you know, it's a tough place. And so when you find it, it does seem magical and a slightly unbelievable, and that it has, and the city can surprise you. Like, it's the sort of thing where you'll see, you know, something absolutely beautiful and something absolutely terrible all in one day.
Yeah.
And that's kind of similar to the roller coaster of love, I think. And there was no question that it was going to be set in New York and set in my New York, and the sort of ways in which I've seen the city and the people I've met and what I've witnessed here. And I think it's a beautiful ode to New York set rom-coms.
It is.
All
the movies and shows that we love that have been in New York, that, I mean, from such a spectrum, but they do all have a feel. I loved that it was set there, and it makes me want to visit again. And every scene that was at a wedding, behind the scenes or wedding meetings, or mm-hmm. seemed to feel familiar to us too, which is to us, probably me and Jason and any other planners I know that have read it. Because weddings are such a big part of the book, I wanted to know how you figured out, I mean, most people just attend weddings. So you mm-hmm. have to do some research outside of just being like, oh, I was a guest and this is what I learned. So I wanted you to tell us about that process and how people helped you beyond just like telling you what it's all about, what our jobs are about. Cause I thought it was a pretty realistic idea of what planners do. Mm-hmm. I also thought it was really refreshing, and I was happy to read early on that the planner, the main planner, Liv, whose husband dies, mm-hmm. Is not written in a way that plays into that, like, it's the most important, most perfect day of anyone's life, and we're honored to be a part of it. Cause that's always made me uncomfortable. And I don't know any planners that talk like that, really.
Right.
Like, that really feel that way, because it is a business and we know it can get kind of crazy. So I thought it was so great that, like, right from the onset, you understood that Liv has a take that felt familiar to me as a planner.
Yeah, she's more of a realist, and she's been doing it for 20 years. So it's, I think that the starry-eyedness of it has faded somewhat for her. But really, that more starry-eyed version is more Savannah's take. And it was fun to have both of those characters, because they could kind of balance each other out. And what they could learn from each other was Liv, you know, Savannah eventually helps Liv sort of soften up a little bit, and Liv helps Savannah wise up a little bit as to the realities of not just wedding planning, but life. And she's quite a naive character.
Where did you, who did you do research with? Like, how did you develop Liv's character? Who did you talk to in real life?
So over the course of writing this book, I take research very seriously, and I really enjoy making characters, situations, professions, experiences, like whatever it is, completely authentic to people's lives. And so I was always going to do a lot of research, but for this book in particular, I was able to research my own life, because I was also planning and having my wedding over the whole time that I was writing the book, from ideation to to sort of final execution.
Is this why you wrote the book then? Because you were planning your own wedding?
Yeah, I mean, weddings were definitely on the brain. And when I got engaged in the fall of 2018, I asked my then girlfriend, now wife, to marry me on our 5-year anniversary. And we decided to get married in the summer of 2019 because I'd heard something that however long you're engaged for is how long you're planning your wedding for. I don't know if you've heard that or if you think that's true or not.
Kind of works. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, and also it depends on your personality type. Yeah. That would have been true for me. Like that just, I heard that and was like, bingo, they got me. So I'm like, I don't want to be planning for over a year. So let's do 2019 in retrospect. Amazing idea.
Good timing, lady.
Big for you. So even though it was kind of a crunch, came out well. And so I was really learning not just about weddings and wedding planning from a logistical point of view, but just these bigger questions of like, what is a wedding? Why do we have them? What parts of these traditions do I want to have, or do we want to have in our ceremony and party and whatever? And what do we want to leave behind? Because early on into my research of the book, I found out that all of these things that we hold up as being traditions for weddings have come from all different places that are not necessarily indicative of a universal expression of love and commitment. Like the idea that an engagement ring should cost 3 months' salary, which I definitely had heard and had kind of internalized, is from a marketing campaign for a diamond company. Like that's not just like the truth. That's something that's become true. And so even just thinking about like, do I want to wear a white dress, or have I just been told I want to wear a white dress? And that's why I think I want to wear a white dress, but I don't actually want to wear a white dress, which obviously can send you completely mad.
Yeah, and then you're, who am I? What?
Yeah, who am I?
Is art?
Is time real?
What day is
am
it?
Am I alive, or is this just the experimentation of AI? Like, I don't know. So, but
I think I like cauliflower anymore.
I just think I like cauliflower. Actually, I really do like cauliflower.
Me too. Have you tried it with buffalo sauce? Forget
it. God, anything with buffalo sauce is so good. My first contact, and this was before I got engaged, it was when I was just starting to dance around the idea of it. I got into an Uber pool and was in a chatty mood and got talking to the woman I was sharing with. And it turned out she was a wedding photographer. Her name is Aaliyah Lovely. She's still...
What a great name.
Yeah, beautiful name. And she does like a lot of fine art kind of wedding photography. And so I was like, oh, that's so interesting. I'm thinking of writing a book about with wedding planners and wedding vendors. And we were talking. And then as she got out, it was in Brooklyn in my neighborhood. I said, oh, well, do you want to have lunch with me like later this week? I'll buy you lunch. We'll keep talking. She's like, sure. So we met up, we had lunch, and I got this real download from her about just what her job is like, what she's perceived over doing it many times, which is, like you said, different from being a guest, being a professional. And she hooked me up to a few different planners. She was from the South. So my first kind of round of interviews were with people from Kentucky, which I think is kind of how Savannah emerged, being from there. But then she also connected me with some wedding planners in the city, and I had lunch with someone. I'm big on buying people lunch, and she was more like Liv. So she was really practical, and she was very just straightforward. There was no frills, no fuss, just in her personality. And I was like, oh, this is interesting, because all of these women I'm talking to from the South, they're more, you know, beautiful, blonde, mm-hmm. all of their Instagrams are so perfect. And this woman mm-hmm. was just like, it's about budget, it's about deadlines, about this, it's about that. Yeah. And I was like, oh, these two are so worlds apart, they're going to be a really good character pair, you know, a foil or a dyad, whatever you call it, but having sort of these opposites work really well. So just from that, the characters kind of started to emerge, and I'm really attracted to that kind of Liv character, because that's probably closer to me as someone who's just a bit more practical and a realist and so on and so forth. And that's how I kind of found them, and then started to kind of build out their characters around them, of all of the supporting characters.
So in wedding planning is time consuming, mm-hmm. and so is writing a book, I imagine. Mm-hmm. So I mean, if you're doing both on a laptop, do you like close your laptop when you're done working on something? And then you're like, okay, wedding brain, you know, writing off, planning on, or how, like, how did you plan in your own wedding in any way outside of just like you're learning about stuff, but were there, did you have feelings like this is fucking stupid or frustrating, or somebody in my book needs to express that this, there's this overwhelming sense that can come with wedding planning also?
Yeah, it's funny actually, the more I think about it, how similar writing a novel and wedding planning is, although I was much further down the line. This was my fifth book, so it wasn't my first time at the rodeo. You know, I had four other books published and I've written two books that haven't been published, so much more familiar with novel writing. Still really hard every time. And we sort of, I sold this off a 25,000 word submission that then I ended up throwing out and starting again in 2019. So, you know, it's unfortunately you're always learning. But with wedding planning, of course, I had no idea. And I host a storytelling series I have a producer, but we sort of, you know, we're both in the weeds on it together. It's called Generation Women. We invite a performer in their 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, and 70s to tell a story on a theme every month. We're back to live shows, yada, yada, yada. I've been familiar with events. So I kind of felt like, oh, I have a sense of this. Like it's 100 people, 120 people. You know, we book a caterer, book a venue. Mm-hmm. I get some outfits. And how hard can it be?
We eat, we drink.
Yeah, we eat, we drink, you know, like we'll do it on a budget and we'll come out of this, you know. And very early on, I realized how naive that was and that wedding planning is so much more than the sum of its parts. It's not just an event. And even if it was just an event, it's a huge one because we were doing the 3-day wedding weekend, the Friday night party, Saturday ceremony and dinner and dancing and Sunday brunch. Like we were doing the full American wedding because that's not common in Australia. So my parents were just thought the whole thing sounded so outlandish. They were like, 3 days? Like, because in Australia, it's just, you would arrive at like one venue. And then there's the ceremony, then there's the dinner, then there's the party and everyone, you know, toddles home at 2 a.m. or whatever, but it's only a day. So the idea of the whole thing was off the bat to them.
Weekend. Yeah.
Bizarre.
Yeah.
And I was like, but you know, we're sort of wanting to see everyone and spend time with everyone. Yeah. And you kind of come so far and we don't want to just be one day. And
so your wife is American.
My wife is American. Okay. Yes. And she's from California. And so one of the things that kind of came up straight away was my wife is an extrovert. She keeps in touch with people from like elementary school. I am an introvert. I have a small group of friends. I have a small family. She has a big family. And so her, like even just the size of the guest list was like skewing heavily in her favor, which brought up all of these anxieties for me about so many things about equality. But what it was really about was I didn't realize as an Australian marrying an American that I would be, it was sort of one step, another step away from my home country, another severing of the tie.
Interesting. Yeah.
I just hadn't, I know it sounds very naive, but it just hadn't kind of crossed my mind that that would be this further. Because when I came to New York, I was 29. I couldn't get on the plane fast enough. Like I was so sick of Sydney. I felt like I'd met everyone I was going to meet. I'd slept with half of them. Like it was just like, I'm like, get me out of here. And I was so ready for like a new adventure. But I never thought down the line of like, well, what if you meet an American? What if you marry an American? What if you live here forever? Like it just didn't, you know, you're living one day at a time.
You were just coming here to party and live life.
And party like, and yeah. Be a writer and just enjoy the city and everything. So this was this situation where I started to really think about like, well, what is my future? What is our future? Like, does this mean like I'm never going to go back to Australia, like land of free healthcare and beaches, you know? Mm. So that was sort of something that was very stressful, along with the fact that you're planning this. The first thing that an engaged couple does is plan an event that represents them as a married couple, which you're not even yet, for everyone who's ever meant anything to them over a series of days without going broke or mad. And that is a tall ask of anyone, you know, let alone, yes, we were both, like my wife works, I was writing a novel. And we had my wife's business partner at the time was the very well-known relationship expert, one of the world's leading therapists, Esther Perel, who I'm sure you are familiar with.
Esther Perel is like a goddess. Like she's just like, wow. She's changed my life. Like
she's like she's everything changed my to life us. Too. Yeah, she's changed my life too. I've had some wonderful experiences with her. Like I'm a fan of hers and I read her books and I listen to her TED Talks like outside of, you know, our personal relationship. But we've traveled together and we've overseas and domestically, and we've had lots of fun together. And so she was the one that really was able to articulate what was happening, because she's also a foreigner who married an American and raised her family in America. So she knew better than anyone. Like, she's like, yeah, it's a big thing to marry an American. And then because, you know, my wife and I are planning on having a family. And so raising children in a country from where you're not born. She's like, that's a lot. And she was able to just, because my wife found the whole thing so bewildering that I was having so much trouble and that I was
stressed like you've lived out. Here for a while.
Right.
What's
right.
the big, I can and see I, that. Yeah.
And I was having trouble even articulating it to myself. I'm like, why am I so, I can't, like, why is this so much for me? Like, why can't I just get a grip on and plan this wedding or whatever? And so Esther was like, yeah, you've really got to understand that she is sacrificed. Georgia is sacrificing more than you are. Like, you're having a wedding in your home country with all of your friends and family that you haven't ever really like lost ties with. And, you know, Australia is 14 hours ahead. Like, it's actually quite difficult to maintain relationships with people that are that far away. It's like psychologically and practically just very distant. And
so the marriage to you felt more permanent in a way than moving here did?
Yeah. I mean, I never had any question about wanting to get married. Like I think most people think like, oh, were you getting cold feet, or were you like this, suddenly the concept of forever is like, oh boy, that's a long time. But it was never anything about that. It was just about the sort of like, just, yeah, like further cutting myself off from the chance of going home, and which I didn't at the time think that I wanted until it was possibly taken away from me. Because if we, you know, we don't have kids now. We travel a lot, you know, pre-COVID we did. But then I was thinking, well, if we get married and have a family and the kids are in school and like, am I here forever? Like, and so that was just a big thing. And through the conversations with E, like we talked about the idea that we might do a proper stint in Australia someday, and even just the fact that she was open to that really changed things and helped bring some more sort of, I guess, like a quality and perspective to the whole thing, and just to be able to articulate what was stressing me out.
Yeah, I can see how my husband is from Mexico, so when we got married a long, long time ago, I do remember at one point him, you know, kind of articulating like, I'm definitely like staying here. Like, this is becoming my home. And for me, I was like, well, of course you are. But then, you know, it's like, yeah, you, I could imagine me now, if I was going to another country and I fell in love with somebody and got married, I'd been like, but I didn't know that I was going to live here forever. Like, this is tying those two things together. So that's interesting.
And what I think what strikes me is the loss of home, the idea of home, where we grow up, what is home to us, but also the flip of that being that when you get married, you are creating a family, and home is where you are with your family and people. You know, we even try to tell our listeners all that when we're trying to encourage them to think about the marriage and not just the wedding, like two people saying they're going to get married, marrying each other. It is something that the government has to sign. Like, it is, you know, a formality. It is legal. It is regulated. It is real. There's a million reasons to do it. And you are, the two of you, without ever even having kids, or, you know, even if you never want to have kids, but two people are creating a family. But that often means one or both are more severed from what home means. And then you have to redefine that. And you're also defining your relationship. And then at the same time, you're thinking about all this stuff. You're planning this big party that's costing a shitload of money. And all of that seems very overwhelming.
Yeah, especially when there's this idea that it's meant to be so fun.
Yeah,
like,
you better
have fun. Because you sort of feel like, oh, I'm failing at this as well. Because not only am I starting to have all these like different thoughts that I'm working through, but I'm not enjoying what's supposed to be this incredibly fun, creative process. And so that's like this added
And now I see how tying in the guest list, you mentioned your wife's guest list, which was much larger than yours, right? There were more people on it. I can see how that also kind of, yeah, you're like, I'm coming, this is your country. Well, it's your country too, but I mean, it's like, it's more like her. We're getting married where you are from. Well, not California. She's from Cali, but you know what I mean? Like guest list being larger, you adapting to the traditions of an American wedding, you moving here. So yeah. Okay. Okay.
It might feel like, did it kind of feel like you were a guest at times? Like, oh, we're
that was what I was worried about. Yeah. That was what I was worried about it not feeling, because when we both have landed away from our family hometowns, you know, and our life in New York feels very equal, you know, because we have created our life here. We have our friend group here. And we, you know, there's like a really good give and take in the relationship, and we're very equal as far as, I don't know, we're sort of at the same like financial level. It's sort of just things like we have the same values and outlook, and I really feel like my wife is not just my wife, but she's like my peer, I guess, or something like that. But over the course of the wedding planning and suddenly sort of seeing like how many more people that she'd be bringing, I just did not want it to feel, I definitely didn't want it to feel that I was going to be like a guest at my own wedding, and that it was just going to be an equal celebration of us, not this sort of celebration of like her family, oh, and I'm there as well, you know, which of course it wasn't, because of course a wedding really is about the couple. And it's just honestly, like, it is just a fact of how, you know, like a lot of my friends, the kind of people that would come to a wedding if it was local, they can't, like, to have Australians come to an American wedding is thousands of dollars, right, for the flights, the accommodation, the amount of time it would take, you know, you can't do it in a weekend. It has to be a week, and people have, you know, holidays and whatever. So that, like, I had like lots of my kind of more casual friends, like the friends of hers that would come in, were just like, I can't justify it, you know, and that was tough.
This episode of the Big Wedding Planning Podcast is sponsored by our friend Mark Grollo at Unboring Wedding Academy.
UnboringWeddingAcademy.com/bigwedding. Go there now. You will thank us, I promise. We are so stoked to continue to partner with Unboring and Mark. We love him. He's been a guest. He's hosted an episode, the only person besides us to host an episode on our podcast.
If you are asking someone to officiate your ceremony that is not a professional officiant, you need this. This is what you need. You need to give this to them. You need to purchase it and give it to them right away. Or if you're somebody who is performing a ceremony for a friend or a loved one, you need this. This is going to tell you everything and get you all set up.
Yes, it is the key to making the ceremony flow, boom, without a problem, no issues. Everyone's going to be like, that was the best ceremony we've ever been to. And you're going to be like, yes, Unboring Wedding Academy saved our wedding. Thank goodness we heard about them from Michelle and Christy on the Big Wedding Planning Podcast.
Mark is a pro. He's been performing wedding ceremonies for a very long time. And he thought, you know what? I don't want anybody out there who's not a pro to do this in a shitty way.
Yeah.
I want them to do it the right way. So he put together this digital course. He is giving you a huge discount, like huge.
Historical. Okay?
Historical. It's crazy. He's crazy, but he's doing it because he loves us and we love him. So go to unboringweddingacademy.com/bigwedding, or you could go to our website, click on the partners page, and you'll see the link right there. We are very proud to partner with Unboring Wedding Academy.
Thank you, Mark. You know, I'm working with the two grooms that have now postponed their wedding over 2 years, but one of them is from Australia and one of them is from the South, and they're getting married where they live in New York City. And they're very like all the things that you just described about being, you know, equal and their life there and how invested they are in the city, but they come from these very different places. And the main reason they postponed beyond even this summer into next fall, because it was supposed to be last October, is because the groom from Australia was like, look, my family is coming to this. Like they are, a lot of them are, it's going to be like a huge wedding. And our biggest priority is the reason that it's going to be this big is because we kind of know our families are never going to see each other again like this, like where siblings and parents are meeting siblings and parents and getting to hang out with them. So it is going to be a 2 or 3 day thing, just like yours, because if everyone's coming all that way, mm-hmm. they want it to be more than just like, hey, mom, dad, this is, you know,
yeah.
They want it to be more than just introductions, and they are really embracing. And it is a huge priority that their families get to know each other and get to see them together and celebrate together. And they're like, we kind of don't care how long we have to postpone. They were like, we've been together forever. We know we're going to be together forever. We'll wait 5 years if it means more of our family, or, you know, Ed's family, yeah. The Australians can get here to do this in the way that we want to. And once they said that, because even I was like, I don't know if I'm going to plan your wedding this many years, like how many years can I, but once they framed it like that, I was like, oh, well, I could be 75 when they finally do it. And I hope they call me, because, you know, I'll be a part of it. But that is a different priority than I hear from a lot of the couples we work with and a lot of our listeners. Families getting to know each other is not necessarily a priority for everyone getting married. Maybe we take that for granted a little bit.
It might just happen, especially if you are marrying someone from the same country, it might just happen more naturally because like, oh, we're already going to get together. But my family has only been over to New York like a handful of times. So it was a really big deal to have them come. And of course the wedding was wonderful. Like, you know, for all of the stress and all of the anxiety and all of the money it cost, it was a truly magnificent day. And it was, our families had a great time, and, you know, all of our friends had such a blast. And of course, with the kind of perspective we have now, everyone feels especially grateful that they were able to be a part of it. So it really did all come good in the end. And it was, I just think a part of being in a marriage and being in a committed relationship, and, you know, you start to have tough questions, and it's not all just, I mean, we've been together for 5 years when we got engaged. So like we had been through things together, you know, and lived together and knew each other pretty well, but you are still constantly, I think, learning how to live with another human being and make them happy and make you happy and make you happy as a couple, which are three totally different things and completely different agendas. And to truly be able to do that is tough, you know.
Did you have a wedding planner?
We didn't.
So we that's didn't. Interesting to me, since you were writing about planners.
Yeah. I know. Well, we were, like, honestly, it was just the budget. We were on a, you know, as everyone, on a budget. And
what
also
was your
because,
wedding budget?
Oh, I think we spent about, in the end, 50 grand.
Okay.
Maybe just under.
Mm-hmm.
And
in New York City or Brooklyn, or where was it?
In the Catskills.
In the Catskills.
Yeah, in the Catskills. Okay. There were some things that we, you know, like our dress budgets. I just wanted to get like a nice white dress. I did end up wearing a white dress, but I didn't get a wedding dress. I got a beautiful Ella Johnson floor length white maxi. And that was like $700. And my wife got her dress from Beholden, which was under $1,000. So like the dresses weren't super expensive. And there were some things that, you know, we had a friend do the photography, and she was a professional wedding photographer, but she just gave us a deal. It was still expensive, but you know, it wasn't crazy. And so, yeah, but I think at the beginning, I just felt like my producer, who I work with on Generation Women, she just got married and she gave me all of her spreadsheets and she said, like, it's a lot, get ready. And she's like a gun, you know? So I was like, oh boy, if you're saying that, okay. Mm-hmm. But like, I think we just got into it. So we, by the time I kind of thought, oh, a wedding planner could be a good idea, it was sort of almost too late. You know, we had someone for a day of, but we did it all, yeah, ourselves.
Awesome.
How did... Well, we could probably talk to you, ask you questions about Esther Perel all day long, but you mentioned that she helped to kind of guide, I mean, or like, you know, by the way, every time you hang out with her, does it feel like you get like, are you getting like deep seeds of truth in your life just by like sitting next to her?
She's so fun. She's an extrovert as well. So she's actually personality wise, she's very similar to my wife. It's why they kind of work so well together. They're both have huge amounts of energy. They love people. They genuinely love people. And, you know, she's the kind of person where you could like get off a plane at 9 o'clock at night and she'd be like, let's go out dancing. And you're like, what? Aren't we just going to the hotel and go to bed? Like, look at what I'm doing. And she's like,
so mean.
She's like, let's go.
That's so not you.
I'm the one that says, let's just go to bed. You're the one that says, let's go dancing.
Let's go dancing.
Yeah. that's how you get,
that's the deal. Like who's going to bed, who's going dancing. But she does, I think, you know, she loves and is very good at and can naturally slip into the role of, you know, like advice giver, orator. We had her, we invited her to speak before the dinner. So
on the wedding day,
I really wanted the dinner to be something where everyone was having like a really good conversation and that it was really meaty and substantial and that people weren't just talking about logistics, which I think if, you know, when left to our own devices, we often just devolve into logistics, which is like, how are we facilitating the next few days of our lives kind of thing. And I'm a host. I love curating experiences and I like things that feel really like, you know, you kind of walk away and you're like, God, that was so good. It was so interesting what that person was saying. And wow. So we had her speak before the dinner. We were like, so everyone had sat down. So we'd gotten married. We'd had cocktail hour and we're all sitting down. And she had this really interesting, she sort of talked a little bit about what we had been talking about, the idea. And she had everyone stand up who wasn't like an American or born in America and to kind of like identify the diversity of where people are from, because we have friends from, obviously from Australia, but there, you know, lots of friends from Canada and the UK, and to kind of just get a visual on that. And then she had this idea, this theory, this truism, which is that often the person who in a relationship, if there's like an intercultural couple, like my wife and I, the person who moved to, you know, America was the only one that could have done it for that relationship. And which is true. Like Lindsay, I don't think would have been someone who would have moved away from her family, like moved mm-hmm. to Australia, you know? Mm-hmm. And she was talking about how in our family dynamics, we're generally raised for autonomy or raised for loyalty. And if you're raised for autonomy, then the values are like, go out into the world, go and see it, you know, do it on your own. Independence is important. You know, what are your ideas like, as opposed to like the community's ideas or whatever. That's being raised for autonomy, or you're raised for loyalty, which means family is first. Family is everything. And that your priorities are the family unit. And I was 100% raised for autonomy. I was raised in a very sort of permissive, free family unit where we were really, I was on a very long leash and we all just kind of did our own thing, you know, like we all had our own interests and there wasn't a lot of crossover and I was just allowed to pursue my own you know, I never had a curfew and things like that. And Lindsay was definitely raised for loyalty. Like the family is super important. Like her family is a very, very close and still very close, wonderful, wonderful people. And they're very close to their sort of cousins and family reunions. And so that is a natural tension. And often in a couple there, you'll find one or the other, that there is like loyalty and autonomy. We find this sort of match. And then so that was a kind of like her kind of conversation topic was like, you know, raise your hand loyalty, raise your hand autonomy. And then at the dinner, everyone was like, just that was like, well, are you raised for loyalty or are you raised for autonomy? And it's like a really interesting thing to think about and to start to articulate.
Oh,
and that
God,
was how we kind of got
so
this great combo going. Yeah, it was really, it was
way,
really good.
Like jump starting people's small talk. Oh, where are you from? What Airbnb?
Yeah.
What did we see on the subway today? To something so much deeper that.
So much deeper. Yeah.
I can see how the work that she does with the couples that she like all. Everything that she does, like she's probably like she's discovered this based
yes,
on.
Yeah. Because she still does, you know, private practice. She's still yeah. seeing people and she's seen them for decades. So
I'm
she has
dying for her podcast to start back up again.
Yes. How's work? Yeah.
Which one?
Is it How's Work? That one?
No,
or the
it's,
new one?
Oh, is there a different one? Oh, is there a new one? No, the one where she's doing the therapy sessions with the couples. Oh,
oh
what's
yeah,
it called?
Yeah.
I forgot. I listened to it when it was like.
Where do we begin?
Where do we yeah. begin?
Mm-hmm.
Yes,
mm-hmm.
So good.
There's so yeah. many times I'm listening to that in the car and she'll say something and I'm by myself and the couples, you know, and I'll be like, right. I'm like looking around. I'm like, am I right? People, like. Yeah.
I know.
You're just affirming or you're like, ah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. I'll tell you another funny story about her because you're fans. So when I first met her, she later said to Lindsay, my wife, she was surprised because the way Lindsay had described me was that I was this introverted, shy writer who spent all of her time like typing her way her stories. And then, you know, she met me and she's like, she's this really confident, you know, charismatic person. It's not at all who you described. And it's a real testament to the difference in how my wife, you know, my wife is very social and I'm a bit of a homebody and I'm totally happy to spend, you know, days, weeks just alone, but I'm very personable, you know, and I'm not this sort of person that you described.
Like a recluse and
was,
in a sweater.
Esther was expecting to meet someone who's just like, oh, hello, my name's Georgia. Oh, hi, you know. Like, it was just like, God damn it, I'm not that bad.
Michelle did an episode with a planner who lives abroad, but was talking all about connection, like fostering connection at a wedding. And it was a super popular episode because people that listened were like, This is what was missing from my wedding planning experience was how to have that kind of party where
like
love is at
about
the forefront.
The aesthetics. Let's talk
yeah.
about connecting
people and bringing our favorite people together. And it occurs to me that when one person is from another country and planning their wedding, not where they're from, and they're an uneven, you know, in the guest count or like it's not 50-50 represented whose family sits here and yours is over there. And oh, isn't it nice they could all come? So that connection would be more challenging in some ways, but also more important that it happens. And you had 3 days to make it happen.
Yeah. And really the one thing that we did, the best thing that we did to facilitate a truly grounded and present experience was we did a phone-free wedding. So we invited people to turn their phones off or leave their phones behind. Of course, people had babysitters and they had to kind of, you know, have them around. But we, it was that made it so much fun because we sort of, I can't remember our exact wording, but it was basically like, don't tag us on photo, like don't put this wedding on your Instagram. So even from that, like if you're not like, you know, like most of the time we're on autopilot. We're like, take a photo of this, take a photo of this. I'll put it up later in my stories, whatever. And so when you're not doing that and when the brides have expressly invited you to have a phone-free wedding in order to have a connected, grounded experience, people really got on board with that. Like I only remember seeing someone on their phone like one time the whole weekend, like over 120 people. And it just gave the whole thing this, you know, the feeling that you want, which is like kind of like a summer camp vibe. And you're, instead of in those moments of like pause where we automatically reach for our phone to check our email, people are like talking to the person next to them, you know,
right,
or like just taking in the moment,
looking around,
or having a good time and mm-hmm. getting a drink or whatever. So
the phone-free wedding becomes a filler, isn't it? It becomes a filler. Yeah, that's great. Yeah. So you took it a step further than just the normal, please don't take photos during the ceremony, please put your phone on silent. This was like, don't touch your phone.
Yeah, don't bring your phone, phone-free wedding. We have one of my best friends one of my best friends, Dan Fox, is an anti-phone like activist kind of thing. He's just kind of known for being, he works with a company called Lightphone, which is a phone that isn't connected to the internet and is like about getting people, you know, de-addicted to their phones. And he has this like life-size iPhone costume. And he was one of our MCs on the first night. And so one of the first things he did was like come out in this costume. And the other MC was like, mate, yeah, sorry, like you're not on the guest list, you know. That was this whole bit that he did.
That's awesome.
So we were like being kind of like ridiculous with it, but people were really into it. And being off your phone is great, and if someone forces you to do it, at first you're kind of like ah, and then you're like, actually I feel so much more relaxed.
I wanted to have you read some of your book while you're here, and the thing that we talked about in the onboarding call that we did. And what I loved about the book is that it's not just different couples. Oh, you have your gay couple, you have, you know, a couple from different cultural backgrounds, or a couple with a complicated start, or, you know, marriage again. These are all the like situations that they're in. And one can imagine that like everyone's love story has their own circle or arc in the book, which is what's so fun about reading it. But the one that struck me the most as, I hate to use a word like realistic, but some, you know, there's definitely scenes in the book that are like in a romantic comedy movie, like the running through the airport at, you know, at any point when, and you want that, we want those moments feel very like, okay, finally we're getting to that part of a movie or of a book. But one that struck me as realistic in the way that I've had these conversations with some of my older friends, specifically some older friends of mine that are gay men, and who, and your character Gorman kind of like lived in New York. He like was on the side of like, we're fighting for our rights and equality. And is, you know, he was there through all of it, but he's kind of anti-marriage in his own relationship, in the way that my brother has had these conversations with me, where they're just like, oh yeah, we're so happy we can get married. That's necessary. But it's just not, it's not our thing. It feels very like, you know, passé almost, or it feels very heteronormative. It's just not, we just don't need it. And I'm like, but we could have a party. Just do it. You've been together for so long. But for some people, it's like, but why? And in this case, you're a couple, only one of them feels that way, and the other one does want to get married. And I think that's a balance in a lot of couples, you know, gay or otherwise. But I loved this part of the book when he kind of gets an epiphany about it. And I especially loved how he and Liv, her, who their friends, how she frames it for him to rethink about what marriage means. And I remember highlighting it in my original book that I have now sent to Lauren, and then like quickly finding that passage again in this one, because it was the aha moment for me as a reader. And I thought you just captured it so well, or wrote it so well.
Oh, thank you.
Did I do a okay?
Yeah, job? Yeah, I'd love to read that out. Perfect. So this scene takes place in the backyard of Liv's brownstone, where they have their home office for In Love in New York. And Gorman is Liv's best friend. He's 55 and his partner, Henry, is 37. So they're a couple, you know, they're sort of apart in age. And as you sort of said, Henry has different points of view. So I'll just read it out. And at the beginning of this scene, Gorman is realizing some creative aspirations of being a playwright, and has a little crush on an actor who's starring in his play. So his best friend bursts out laughing. Darling, I love you, but here's three things I'm pretty sure are true. One, a cute 20-something is not going to run away to a Greek island with you. Two, everyone creates their own version of a marriage. If freedom is important to you, invent a marriage with freedom baked into it. Three, Henry is wonderful and he loves you. You might see marriage as a bad imitation of heteronormativity, but he probably sees it as a safety net for the life your generation fought so hard to get. A warm breeze rustled through the dusk, sending dead willow leaves floating around them. Gorman remembered when the willow was too small for the patch of new dark mulch around it. Now it was as dried up as the spiderweb-covered pot plants, the liver-spotted skin on the back of his hand. Gorman didn't want to get old. He didn't want to be a dull old man any more than he wanted to lose his sense of self in a partnership. But possibly there was some truth to what Liv had just laid out. Liv asked, "Does Henry want children?" Even though they'd never discussed it, the answer came from somewhere deeper than logic. Yes. Liv made eye contact with him deliberately. "Then trust me, a man like Henry won't wait forever." The idea sent a peculiar chill up Gorman's spine. He loved Henry. He loved that Henry fell asleep reading in bed almost every night and didn't wake when Gorman carefully removed his reading glasses. He loved that Henry approached life with a measured and practical thoughtfulness that could still be spontaneous and funny and cut a mean rug on the dance floor. He was trustworthy and hardworking and patient, kind to children and animals. Marriage used to be boring, but it was interesting to consider that getting married, or hell, becoming a father in his mid-50s might just be the most radical thing Ralph Gorman could ever do.
I love that. That's one of two places in the book that if it were to be made into a movie, and I hope it is because I already have it cast in my head, so you can reach out. You can reach out when casting comes. But When that happens, I think, you know, I would tear up watching it for sure. Anytime a character has a realization like that. And so I just loved it. Thank you for reading it.
Oh, you're so welcome. Yeah, it's the book is, you know, a real exploration of marriage in so many different ways. And it felt interesting and important to have a character who was more ambivalent about marriage and wanting to get married. And because of his place in the culture and because, you know, Henry is a sort of much closer to my age and my generation, and gay marriage became, you know, legal as when he was sort of, you know, a young man essentially. But for Gorman, he was a much older man, and I've, you know, being a part of the queer community, having like older gay friends and stuff, there is a certain, in some people, just feeling of like, it's like, we don't need it. Why? And it's, you know, these establishments that didn't want us, like the military, mm-hmm. or boardrooms or marriage, like now they suddenly want us, but like, do I want them? And, you know, and that's like an interesting idea, I think.
That is interesting.
The last thing I just wanted to mention before we talk about the book club, which I'm very excited about, is that ultimately most marriages start with friendship. And I think we could even suffice to say that successful marriages have a lot of friendship baked in. But this book is about friendships, and maybe most specifically female friendships, and the friendship between Liv and Savannah. And I loved that wasn't just on the side, but that their evolution, it wasn't romantic, but it definitely had an arc and a story, all of it, you know, just the two of them, and how important female friendships are to me. I mean, Michelle and I have been, you know, on this journey for a while, and we definitely frame it sometimes as like, oh, we're kind of married and we had dating and then we were long distance and now we're, you know, at the talking every day stage of our relationship. But I wanted to see if you had anything to say about the, like, why the female friendships in the book were they just as important as the marriages, or was Savannah and Liv, you know, sort of a marriage in a way? Or how did you come to that?
Yeah, it's sort of an interesting part of the book that the central relationship of what is certainly a romantic comedy is not a sexual relationship. And it's not between a man and a woman, it's between two women. which is definitely unusual. And but for the fact that there are five love stories around them, it wouldn't make it a rom-com, because by definition, a romantic comedy is about, you know, sexual romantic love. But I liked the idea that the center of this book was a story about two people who are really just culturally different. And I think that came up and bubbled into my subconscious because, you know, I like to approach writing with a pretty light hand. I don't try to have an agenda or something that I'm trying to push through. It's kind of like, if you just allow the art to happen, things will emerge that you're not even aware that, you know, you're thinking about or that's important. And it can feel more natural sometimes as for the reader. But I think the two things that were sort of swirling around my head, one was, we live in this world where we are just so siloed from people who don't think like us. And, you know, we live in these echo chambers and we surround ourselves with people who think like us and talk like us and have the same, you know, political outlook as that we do. And we all know this isn't like I'm announcing something new to you, but the idea that I could bring together two women who have very different, you know, outlooks and upbringings of life together, and to have them, you know, realistically work to a point where they can truly see each other's point of view felt important and, you know, reflective of what the hopes are of this time. Like, you know, I think good art can reflect or deliver the fantasies and desires of the culture. And I think one of our fantasies and desires right now is for us to get more on the same page with the people that we, you know, don't agree with. And the other thing that is important to me is this idea of this multi-generational connection and between these two women, because Savannah is 23, Liv is 49. They're at completely different stages of life. Like, Liv is a widowed mom and, you know, has been in business for decades. And Savannah has never had a serious relationship and hasn't really spread her wings at all. And from my work with Generation Women, the storytelling series that I started in 2017, I saw quite quickly the need that the audience had to hear from people who weren't their same age. And for younger women, that means older women. For older women, that means younger women. We also, of course, cast non-binary performers in our shows as well. It's so much about creating a space to hear from different generations from you, and that there can be so much gained from that. And so that was something that I felt was really interesting about the book as well, that these two people, you know, lives like a Gen X, that kind of thing, you know, like that's her. And you know, Savannah is millennial or generation, you know, Y or whatever. And so I really enjoy where they get to, but you'll have to read the book to find out.
Yeah, I liked it too. I liked it a lot. And that there wasn't a like patronizing tone to it,
mm-hmm.
you know, like, Liv learns just as much and is open to that.
Yes. And I think that's really important as well, especially when you never want to kind of have a character who you think is right. My editor, I work with a developmental editor who I've worked with on every draft of every book for many years. That's separate from my in-house editor at Simon & Schuster, is someone who gives me my like very, very good feedback, and that we work very closely on drafts. And she really likes the idea of dyads or opposing views. Like, for every point of view stated, look for a way to see the other side of that and state that, because it then pulls you away from having an agenda, like feeling like you've got something that you're trying to like say. And it's a little more intellectually rich to, you know, if you have a character who's like, this is how the world works, it's just so interesting to have another character saying, well, this is how the world works, because then as a reader, you're making up your own mind and you're not feeling like you're just being told what this novelist thinks, you know, through a heavy hand.
Wow.
Yeah. See, Michelle, you can get a lot out of reading books.
Yeah, who Michelle.
Or listening to that. Who knew? Well, we're so excited to host our first book club. I am an avid reader, but I've never actually been a part of a book club. And from what I hear, it's mostly a reason to get together and drink wine with yeah, books on your lap.
That's the first reason. Yeah.
Yes, yes. So we're going to do that with you, Georgia, and I'll use the guide probably in some ways to get us rolling. But for all of you listening, if you want to be a part of that, then you need to read the book, because that's what you do in a book club. You read the book and then you talk about it. And we're just going to have a one-time only talk with Georgia on Zoom. This episode's being released June 2nd. So we will do this in like mid-July. But hit us up, email me, email us at the pod if you're looking for the book, because we're going to send, or Georgia, your team graciously offered to send 10 books to the first 10 emails that we get. So we will send them to you. Outside of that, Georgia's going to let us know where we can buy the books, but then just let me know, you know, we'll go back and forth on email and we'll post this on all of our channels about the book club. It'll be mid-July 2021 at like happy hour-ish time. So people can get there and, we'll talk about the book, about wedding planning. Our friend Jason Mitchell Kahn might join us as well. He was on episodes 172 and 194, and he's a planner in New York City.
In New York City.
He might pop in. He loves the book as well. So yeah, email us at thebigweddingplanningpodcast@gmail.com. And Georgia, I know we could get the book on some big distributors, but where would you, in an ideal world, suggest that we purchase this book?
Well, it's always great to buy from your local independent bookstore to keep your local indie booksellers alive. They do a hell of a job in supporting local writers, and they're just wonderful places in the community. And if you buy through bookshop.org, that will route your book, your purchase, from your local bookstore. So you can either buy it from your local bookstore, like pop in and grab it, or if you're, you know, hurried for time, then bookshop.org and IndieBound is another site that will buy from your local indie booksellers. It's available as an ebook, as an audiobook, and as a paperback. So whatever your reading style of choice is, there's something there for you. And yeah, we're going to have so much fun. Like, chatting about the book is such a great way to enhance your reading experience, because you just get to hear like who was, you know, everyone else's favorite characters, and what else do people respond to? And I mean, I'm already seeing some fan favorites bubble up on Instagram, but I'm always so curious to see who people are responding to, and you know, their favorite parts, and I can divulge all of my writing secrets.
There's some spoilers that we did not mention, obviously, but also I have like a couple questions, were actual questions after reading, when I was like, did I miss something? Like, why did that happen? So I'm going to ask.
We can get into that in the book club.
I'm gonna do it. And I'm really excited about it, because it will, like I said, it'll be my first book club, and then the pod for us. This might be an ongoing.
Move over, Oprah. The Big Wedding Planning Podcast book club is happening. No, there's so many authors now that we've talked to, and like there's so many great books about, because marriage and weddings is fucking nuts.
Yeah.
It just is. I mean, look, every time somebody plans a wedding, every five weddings, there's like one business or book or movie that comes out of it. You know what I mean? I feel like, but yours sounds like right down our alley, very unique. Like I'm really like very, now I want to know what's going on between Liv and this young girl. I forgot her name.
Savannah. Yeah.
I really want to see how they plan how they talk about weddings as wedding planner. Does Savannah become a wedding planner?
Well, you got to read the book and find out.
Okay.
Come on, Michelle.
Or right. Listen to the book.
I'm going to have to listen.
Or listen to the book, because you're an audiobook fan. Yeah.
Oh my gosh, Georgia, it's so nice to meet you. And we really appreciate you coming on. We're so excited. And the book club's going to be awesome. And Christy, I'll let you take the lead on that, because you're the reader and the fan.
I am. We already have, actually, because we've mentioned it a couple times in like our Patreon group and some of our more VIP listeners that are in touch with us. And so I think I already have a list going.
Okay. All right. Well, get in there quick, guys, if you want those books.
Yeah, get in there. Join the book club. All right. Email us. Georgia, Thank you so much. It was lovely to talk to you and hear your Irish accent. And, Brooklyn's awesome, and I love your scrunchie. Thank you.
And oh, you're so welcome.
It's called It Had to Be You. So follow along, get the book, and thank you again, Georgia, for joining us.
Thank you. See you in July.
The Big Wedding Planning Podcast is hosted and produced by me, Christy Matthews, and Michelle Martinez. It is edited by Veronica Gruba. Music by Steph Altman of Mophonics. If you like the Big Wedding Planning Podcast, please subscribe. We are available for free on pretty much all podcast player apps. Help us get the word out by rating and reviewing us on Apple Podcasts.
Follow us on Instagram at the Big Wedding Planning Podcast and be sure to use the hashtag #PlanThatWedding when posting. Become part of our Facebook group. Join us and our amazing members. Just search the Big Wedding Planning Podcast community on Facebook. If you want to get in touch with us, you can email us at thebigweddingplanningpodcast@gmail.com or you can call and leave us a voicemail at 415-723-1625 and you might hear your voice on a future episode. That is it. Happy planning, everybody. Christy, love you, love your show.
Bye.